there's a lot of hate going on. You pop a cherry with an orgy, and it's all good.
Really, really talented, handsome young man.
Don't walk in here with a giant banana and think everything's going to be peaches.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, September 2nd, 2011. And now that we're in September, you guys know what that means. It's finally college football season. We've made it through all the monotony. I'm here with two sports writers who are very excited to get the season off on the right note. We'll start with Tyler Jett.
Oh, Greg is so excited right now. You guys see a smile. I'd like to give a shout-out to Dick's Sporting Goods for giving me this water bottle that I will be drinking throughout the show.
Why do you give a shout-out every intro?
Every season starts at Dick's. Because I got love for a lot of people.
You don't have any more girls you met this time? It's just Dick's?
Well, I did meet girls, but I can't remember their names. So.
That's fair. And then we have from FightingGators.com, Cody Jones.
Good to be back with you. I believe the last time we did this was 2 years ago during the SEC baseball tournament, before it.
In the Alligator archive somewhere, there's a podcast with Anthony Chang, Tyler Jett, and Cody Jones previewing the SEC baseball tournament.
That's
so
true.
You might want to find that,
if you check out the ratings, it'll probably be way down the list, so that'd probably be your best place to start.
Well, that shouldn't have been the last time Cody was here, but he happened to skip out on us last baseball season.
That's a good point.
We had him in the paper and everything. So many people opened up and read the box and thought Cody Jones was going to be on.
So many people didn't listen because of that, missed a great podcast.
And just completely bailed on us. All right, so today we're going to preview a little bit of Florida's game against FAU coming up tomorrow. I know everybody's real pumped about that. We're going to talk a little bit about what FAU is going to bring to the table. Then we're going to get into some Florida stuff. We're going to talk depth chart. We're going to talk a little bit of the position battles, especially cornerback. We'll get into the offensive line a little bit. We're going to give you our season predictions. We're going to do, let's see, who we think is going to lead the team in different categories. And we're going to talk about what we think Florida's best strategies would be on offense and defense. And then how we would call against Florida if we were coaching another team's offense or defense. So it should be a jam-packed show. We got a lot of things going on today. Is there anything I missed, guys? Anything else we want to tease for the listeners?
I believe that's about it.
Yeah, at the very end, we'll give you our Twitter handles.
So yeah, yeah.
For that.
That'll be the best part, actually.
Yeah, actually, at the very end, don't forget the Gator Guarantees. I know you guys are looking for something this weekend. We're going to tell you what to watch. Keep an eye out for the Gator Guarantees.
You won't get that information anywhere else. I can pretty much guarantee that.
All right, so we're here at the first game week of the Florida season. I know we've all waited a long time for this. We're going to see something worth writing about this weekend, hopefully. We'll start with a really, really quick preview of FAU. I know most of the listeners probably know nothing because we know very little ourselves, and this is our job. Last season, they were 4-8 overall, 3-5 in the Sun Belt. They're a middle-of-the-road team, just not that good. They have a running back who's actually pretty good, I think, in Alfred Morris. I haven't watched a lot of FAU, but he's near their career leaders in everything rushing, so got to think he's pretty decent. They're switching to a 3-4 this year, so maybe there's a chance they confuse some people with some things, but I doubt it because they're just not that good, and that's really all I have on FAU. Do you guys know anything?
Yeah, I mean, FAU is a budding little university down in Boca Raton, Florida, real close to the beach. I can tell you that. That's sort of the recruiting pool. I know that there are usually three middle-aged gentlemen in fire hats that come and yell, "Who let the owls at? Who?
Oh, I get it. I see what they did there.
Yeah, they're real, real passionate about the FAU Owls. Their cheerleaders are not very attractive. This is the only thing they can tell you about FAU, though.
Wow.
I was someone who went to a lot of FAU games in high school because I'm from Boca Raton. So those things are the mainstays, the unattractive cheerleaders and the gentlemen in fire hats. Other than that, it's all interchangeable.
So don't look at the sideline then this week.
I wouldn't suggest it. Well, look at the Florida sideline if you'd like to see some eye candy. But
the only thing I think you didn't mention that I know is that their starting quarterback has completed one pass in his career.
I thought it was zero.
I thought it was zero.
I believe it was one because he played in two games, their first two games last year.
Well, he's never started,
so
that's for sure.
He's got to step up on that zero passes completed.
Yeah, and I mean, no better place to make your first career start than the Swamp, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
their game plan should be pretty simple, I think. Just kind of pound it with that running back and hope to get out and at least cover the spread.
Yeah,
their quarterback is redshirt junior Graham Wilbert. I believe he's like 6'7" or 6'6", which is not helpful at all if you can't throw the ball well. He's from Valencia, California, and he saw action in two games last season against Michigan State at Ford Field, where he drove the offense down the field with two passing attempts, completing one for a career-long 41 yards.
Wow.
So, hey-o.
That's really leading a drive with that one completion.
screen, too.
Well, you know, like 41 yards like half the field, so that's a drive right there.
True.
And then he also saw action against USF, that's South Florida for those who don't know acronyms, and he suffered a broken thumb on his throwing hand in that game. So, not really experienced, although, according to the Florida Atlantic practice notes, which, you know, can't lie, Wilbert has taken the majority of the reps at quarterback this offseason. and he's been doing pretty well in 7-on-7 drills. So,
which are all critical factors to the first game of the season.
Yeah.
The 7-on-7 drills. And
yeah, because, you know, no defensive line is going to be involved in this game.
Right. All right, so I guess with that, we'll move into Florida. Start with something, the injury update for everybody out there. The last thing we heard from Muschamp was Thursday on his radio show. We're filming this on a We're recording this on a Friday morning. The people on the radio show were a little too busy welcoming him to Florida and getting real hype for the game to kind of talk about anything like this. But the last we know is that Jeremy Brown's questionable with a knee. Omarius Hines is questionable with his hamstring. And Dee Finley is questionable with a shoulder injury.
Right. And A.C. Leonard's out with a knee. I do like that every time Muschamp brings up the injury, he's like, and A.C. Leonard's still out. It's like, yeah, he's had surgery out for like half a year.
Yeah.
But he's still out this week.
Yeah, Tyler and I discussed a lot of these things on Sunday's show, so I guess we'll just throw it over to Cody. Of those three, which one do you think is the most significant or could be the biggest loss if that player doesn't play?
I think as far as the season goes, it's probably Jeremy Brown. Saturday, I don't really know if it would affect that much. I think we've kind of seen this in the past where a lot of the guys that are questionable for that first game usually just don't play, just because, again, it's FAU, and you're probably not going to need them too much. I think that's probably, I would be a little surprised if any of the three guys played, just based on that, the fact that they're probably not going to need them this week as much as they will 2 weeks from now against Tennessee or something like that. So in the long term, though, I'd say Jeremy Brown, just because he brings some stability to that cornerback position that really doesn't have a whole lot. Hines is a guy that kind of, I think, has fallen through the depth chart a little bit, maybe didn't pick up the offense as quick as everybody expected him to, but I'd say Jeremy Brown is probably the guy for the long term.
I don't know. I guess you're right. That's only because like no one really has been hurt yet.
Yeah,
I guess
that's true.
Jeremy Brown wasn't good last year.
No,
you can say that. Like the Georgia game, he got benched because he was getting torched. The LSU game, I believe he's the one who gave up the winning touchdown. Although Will Hill did his damage as well in that game. I think the Omarius Hines, is that not probably the most surprising thing? Is that Hines has just fallen off?
Yeah.
Last year when you watched him, it's like every time he got the ball, he was just balling out there. He had a touchdown against Alabama. He had that great fake play against Tennessee last year. And it's like, you're not even hearing from him.
It really seemed like this would be a great fit for him, too, with the offense. That's kind of what I thought, at least. You know, they're going to the pro-style offense and kind of using him in a bunch of different ways. I felt like that would be a really good fit for him, but for whatever reason, just hasn't been so far.
Right. I don't think the kind of people you want to have in the pro-style offense are the Deontay Thompson opposite Quentin Dunbar. Like, it's nice to have a deep threat, but to have two guys where that's pretty much their bread and butter. I think you would rather have a guy like Hines out there
who could bigger body
kind of,
guy.
Yeah, just control the middle of the field a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it'd be like you'd want Quentin Dunbar, Omarius Hines, and Frankie Hammond. Those three can kind of give you something different and leave Deontay on the sideline. But I guess I'm not coaching the team, so
it's
unfortunate.
Anyway, like we said,
all right, Gainesville.
Whoever does or doesn't play out of that group probably won't make a whole lot of difference Saturday. One thing I do want to talk about is how much we expect to see of the new offense and the new defense. I know a lot's being made of this, how it's kind of an unveiling and it's going to be their first time out there, but how much do you guys expect that they're really going to show on both sides of the ball?
You know, I don't think it'll be too much, actually. And I think I'm a little different based on that, but I would just expect, you know, them to maybe hold some stuff for Tennessee. I think we'll see probably some of the defense, but again, being that they have a quarterback that doesn't have a lot of experience, I would expect FAU to just run the ball quite a bit, so I don't think we'll see a lot of the different blitz packages that they've talked about. And again, if they can't pressure the quarterback against Florida Atlantic, I think there's probably bigger issues than just that. So I don't really expect to see a whole lot on Saturday. I don't know about y'all.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you defensively. I think that there's a lot of things that they probably don't want to do and show their cards against FAU. Offensively, I feel like you might see a little bit more just because it's not like they're going to run a pro-style offense. It's not like that's the style they're going to run. There's not that many different things you can do. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they're not going to, like, run their double reverse crazy trick plays, obviously. But I would say you probably see 80 to 90% of the offense, and you might save a couple plays here and there for, like, desperate situations against bit better teams. But for the most part, you'll see a good example of what you'll see for most of the season on Saturday.
Yeah, on offense, I think we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I think it's key for Florida, for John Brantley, to have a good day. And I think that to try to make that happen, it's going to be a little simpler than maybe 80 or 90% of what they have. Just like a smaller package where they can be really confident in those plays and just execute a few things, taking snaps under center and stuff like that that they haven't done before in live game action.
Maybe. I think the offense could be simple, but that might just be a factor of like where they are and picking up the offense.
That's true.
I don't necessarily think it's going to be like that much bigger as the season goes on. It seems like they're not, like they've apparently had plenty of mental problems during practices, so I can't imagine they're going to make this a super complex offense this year in the first season. It seems like everyone's praised Charlie Weiss for kind of dumbing it down and making it simple. So I think it could be simple, but I think it could be simple for the whole season.
Yeah, I think that's more a product, too, is that Weiss will kind of dumb things down, pull things out that haven't worked in practice. I think that's something he said quite a bit, and the players have as well, is that that's the one thing that they realize from him is that he'll throw plays out immediately if they don't work. You know, and he said they'll even do that on game day. If they have the game plan going in and something's not working, he'll throw that play out completely and go from there. So I think that's more what it is from a Weiss standpoint, is making things simpler as opposed to more complicated.
And I think it's similar to that on defense, because Muschamp said earlier this week that some of the safeties were having a little bit, I don't think it was Elam, but I think the people opposite Elam were having a little bit of trouble picking up some of the things in the scheme. And so I think from that perspective, they'll probably take some things out of the defensive playbook, too, and only show a little bit there. I would imagine there's going to be some 3-4, though, just to kind of show that part and just get used to lining up that way and playing basic plays out of that formation.
What's their base? Is their base a 4-3 or is their base a 3-4?
I think it's still 4-3. Okay. That's what they've said. I bet the goal is probably to go to a 3-4 eventually.
Yeah.
They just don't have the personnel for it now.
I can see that. I don't know.
They have Ronald Powell. But I've been told.
I think they do fit into the 3-4 pretty well, but I just feel like they're so used to playing the 4-3, we'll probably get a lot of that. And then as the season goes on, I imagine we'll shift over a little bit more.
Right. The only thing as far as a 3-4 standpoint, I think they don't have the depth at linebacker, at least the proven depth. They've got bodies there and probably enough to make it work, but I just don't think they have enough guys that maybe have proven what they can do at this level.
Right. They're competing to get one last linebacker in there. Yeah. It seems like everyone was just sort of fighting. Like, can we get one more linebacker in on the defense? So I think you're right in that situation. Yeah. They only have three, maybe.
So since we already established that it's probably going to be a little bit simple and we might not see all the players and all the plays, what are some things that you guys are going to be looking for this weekend that you think are things you can take stuff from and actually it'll have an effect on the season going forward, areas that you think are important for Florida this weekend?
I wrote about this a little bit earlier in the week. I mean, the offensive line, looking at how that unit's going to be, I think that's the most pivotal group for the Gators this year. If their offensive line's good, their running game is going to be good. If their running game's good, their whole offense is going to be good. And if they have the offense, I think they could surprise some people this year, because I think defensively they're going to be pretty good. So for me, it's watch the way the offensive line works together. If there's any missed assignments, that might be an issue that's going to really hurt you long term. Look at the way that basically how cohesive the unit is as a whole.
I don't think this is going to surprise anybody, but my guy's John Brantley. I think he absolutely, like you said, Greg, has to have just a huge game. Maybe not a huge game, but just a confident, a solid game on Saturday, and ease him in with maybe some play action. That's what Weiss and Muschamp have said quite a bit that they want to do really throughout the whole season. But I think that's what we'll see Saturday as well. Get him some easy throws out there. Get him some open throws just to kind of get in the rhythm of the game and build some of that confidence back that was absolutely non-existent at the end of last season, and try to get him, at least from a mental standpoint, back to where he was. Maybe in practices before last year, I guess. I mean, we didn't get to see any of those. But just try to build some confidence back for him.
Statistically speaking, what kind of line do you think he needs to have?
I mean, I would say maybe a 60% completion rate, somewhere around there, 70 maybe, if you're getting greedy. But maybe 250 yards. I think something like that. We don't know how long he's going to play either. That's it, too. I mean, if Demps and Rainier are running all over the place, like, again, you would probably expect them to run out FAU defenders.
Right. I feel like as important as anything is that he can stand back there in a pocket and not get hit. Like, just be comfortable playing football.
Yeah, he's kind of like an abused dog right now. He's like, he's just really worried about getting touched. He's had a bad lifetime so far. So, you gotta ease him back in there. You gotta show him, hey, guy, we can take care of him.
If they can make a pocket and they can protect him for a couple seconds at least, that'll be something that'll help his confidence, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It goes back to Tyler's point, too. That, I think, is the biggest thing right there, the offensive line, the quarterbacks. I think you could probably make an argument for the secondary as well, being that they could potentially start two freshmen back there. But I think from an offensive standpoint, that's absolutely essential that they at least are somewhat comfortable with what they're doing.
See, the secondary, I'm not as sure I'm going to take anything away from this weekend, because I feel like there's a chance that they could just rotate a bunch of guys in because they're not exactly scared of the FAU wide receivers.
Yeah, but Graham Wilson could get his second completion in his career this Saturday.
This is true, and you want to do everything you can to prevent that. You pull out all the stops for sure, but I don't know. I just think we could see a lot of guys, and I think whoever starts could very well not be the people who start week two or week six or at the end of the season.
Yeah, especially with Jeremy Brown being hurt. That's the only one that's really a question mark. But obviously with being such a young group, you might see some fluctuation as the season goes on. Some guys, get it later on. Like Cody Reyes, you saw him kind of emerge toward the end of last season as a freshman. You might see that this year with like Marcus Roberson or whoever else they had out there.
I mean, you also got the opposite of that. I believe it was in 08. They started Wandy Pierre-Louis at corner, and it wasn't until maybe the Tennessee game when Janoris Jenkins took over full-time for him. So it always depends on that freshman, how well they get accustomed to this defense and kind of get their way in.
Right. Another thing from this weekend that I think I could very easily see a scenario where Dempsey Rainey combined for, like, 20 carries and 200 yards and 3 touchdowns or something. And I don't want to have to hear everybody talking about how it's like, whoa, they're the next great running back duo, and they're going to, like, destroy the SEC. Because it's kind of FAU. Like, I don't think whatever they do this weekend really
it's
has a bearing.
FAU. It is FAU.
You know what I mean? I don't think what they do this weekend has a bearing on the rest of the season from their perspective. Do you guys agree with that? And are there any other areas where you feel like if they just ball out, it doesn't really matter?
I'd say, like, run stopping and, like, blitzing and, like, the way, like, quarterback pressures. Like, I don't care. Like, you're going to take care of their offensive line. You're going to get up a sash and get some rushes. That doesn't mean that you're better than Duke Lemons and Justin Trattauer last year. Although I think you probably have to be. Like, I think that's a pretty low bar. But I'm not going to look at this weekend and be like, look at that. This is an improved pass rush.
Yeah, I think absolutely it's Dempsey Rainey for me. I mean, yeah, especially against the defense that transitioned to a 3-4. Doesn't really – maybe hasn't been recruiting that personnel for a couple years now. To go into that and really, I just don't understand that at all. I think that you're exactly right. You're gonna, because we know if that happens, we're gonna see columns all over the place from that, and
right.
A lot of people are gonna say that they're back and everything. But again, they're kind of proven. I know it's a different offense, but we know what Dempsey Rainey can do. We've seen it for a couple years, but I wouldn't buy into that hype at all. Saturday.
How much do you think we'll see like Mike Gillisley and Mac Brown?
It's an interesting question. Apparently they're way behind in the running back depth chart, but if those guys just, if the game gets out of control, I'm sure they could throw one of those two in there.
Well, it can't be that far behind. It'd be third and fourth. I mean,
numbers-wise, but Muschamp's been pretty clear. I thought that there was a huge gap between Dempsey Rainey and then the next guy.
Well, I think that's definitely true, because they're, like, upperclassmen, and they've always been good. Like, they've never not been good players.
Right, but I felt like there were times last season where people just speculated this, or it was somehow out there that Gillisley was kind of closer to them and was taking some of the carries just on his own merit.
Well, Gillisley was a power runner, and I don't understand necessarily how he doesn't get more play, just because of the fact that you're going to need someone that can give you a little bit of power at some point. I mean, Dempsey Rainey, if you're on the goal line or you're in a third and one, you're going to go with them. I don't see them running over a linebacker or getting that extra yard or two in a big situation like that. Like, where is that going to come from? I feel like Gillisley has to get some love.
Yeah, my thing with Gillisley, I think it's pretty obvious, and the only thing that really makes any sense is that he's struggled to pick up the offense, because he should be in there from that standpoint as well. But I also think that if they get in that situation, I think one thing we'll start seeing as the year goes on, this is total speculation by me, but I think Trey Burton actually makes quite a bit of sense in there, especially if he's playing that fullback spot. They can maybe move him back to just playing running back by himself and maybe use him as that short yardage guy.
Or the Wildcat, which we won't see this week, but that would make a lot of sense too. If you put Burton back at quarterback, or Dempsey or Rainey, and if you can get Dempsey and Rainey and Burton all as potential runners on the same play, you could probably figure out how to get that yard or two.
Right. I think Burton's a pretty good choice to be kind of a guy running it in from short yardage, because when they say he's going to be the fullback when there's a one-back set, I don't really see him as, like, the typical blocking fullback. Like, he's going to catch passes, he's going to touch the ball, he's going to do things like that. So I think he's more of an offensive threat than just the kind of fullback that's going to be out there mauling people.
Yeah, as far as, like, a short yardage guy, though, how did that work out against Alabama? Anybody remember that? Apparently not.
I mean, that's also different, though, wouldn't you say? Like,
it was like he had 3 straight runs that were, like, on the goal line.
Right.
And it was like, that was when everyone had this mini Tebow hype, because it was right after the Kentucky game. He had, like, 400 touchdowns in one game or whatever it was. I think it was, like, 14 or 8 or 6. I can't remember. But the point is, like, right into the Alabama game, it was, like, first and goal from the 3. All right, get Burton in there. Just pound it in and stop. Get Burton in there. Just pound it in. Stop. Stop. And then try to throw the ball and got picked off. Yeah, the jump pass.
Yeah.
That was atrocious.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'm just saying, if you use him maybe in like a two-back set, or they use him like out of the I formation or something like that, and throw like a Hunter Joyer in there, which granted we haven't heard about him at all, but like a freshman fullback that is really the only one on the roster, maybe that's what they start going with. I don't know, I just think that's probably a better mindset than just going from the Wildcat, from the one, like you said, because we saw how that got kind of destroyed a little bit last year.
Yeah, I mean, one good thing about the Wildcat, though, is it gives you multiple threats.
Right, it's true.
Which actually helps in short yardage. I think more than most people would think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the Wildcat could be very good, because you just want to get your 3 best players out there at the same time, and I think that is the 3 backs, counting Burton as a back. So we'll see what they do with that. For this weekend, let's get some score predictions versus FAU. The spread is 35 points, so Florida's heavily, heavily favored. Does anybody think they have a chance of covering that? I know I do not.
I don't think so either. I think, well, it's just tough to take that bet over 35 because you never know what's going to happen in the third or fourth quarter. What's interesting is that the final score may not indicate how Florida plays, so I don't necessarily want to get into that. Because, like, last year, the final score of the Miami-Ohio-Florida game was, like, it was, like, a 30-point game.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way you can count this as, like, a big win. They were struggling with him for the first half. They got a touchdown, like, a 4th and 10 in the fourth quarter. They just chucked it up in the end zone. Ball bounced around and fell in Chris Rainey's arms. Like, that was just atrocious. At the same time, Florida could win by 20, and it could be a very good win. Like, let's say they go up by, like, 42 at some point, and then all the backups are in, and FAU stages a comeback and makes it a 20-point game. I don't think you walk out of that saying, oh, man, that's not good, that's bad. Like, they were up at one point. So the final score may not indicate how they played.
I agree with you. That's why these games are a little crazy, too, is because I think this Florida defense, the first-string guys at least, should be just fine. Because, again, FAU's probably going to pound the ball on the ground. And I feel like Florida was at least halfway decent last year at stopping the run and should be all right this year as well. So I think just from that standpoint, the Florida Atlantic starters probably shouldn't do too much. But again, it's when they're still in the game and you've got the Florida defensive backups in there, then what happens? And that's what I think is just way too hard to predict. So I would still say they probably won't cover that 35 points. But again, like Tyler said, that doesn't really mean anything.
Right. Since the score is kind of useless, what would you say? I mean, it determines who wins and loses. Aside from that, what would you guys say you have to see to consider this a positive showing for Florida? And at one point, is it a kind of thing where it's like last season and it's kind of leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth? Where's that line for you?
For the positives, it's look at the passing game. How does that look? Because like I said, I think if the running game does what I think it's going to do, then how is the passing game going to look? Because I think John Brantley is still the biggest question mark, obviously. This whole offseason basically been about how is John Brantley going to do? And I don't care that everyone says he's more comfortable. I don't care about any of that. I need to actually see it. And if he looks comfortable, the offense is moving the ball efficiently through the air, then I think that I'll walk away and say, all right, this is a much better team than they were last year.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that's the offense, from that offensive part of it, I think that's the huge thing. Because like we said earlier, we know what the running game is most likely going to do. But if John Brantley can stay on his feet, and the other thing, too, is go through his progression. I think that's what we saw him do quite a bit last year, is lock onto one guy, and that ball was going to him, whether he liked it or not, if he was open, whatever. So if he can maybe look off a couple receivers and throw to maybe his third option on the play, I think that'd be a huge positive sign. But, you know, like you said, I mean, we've heard all offseason about all the positives, but I feel like a lot of the positives are similar to what we heard last year as well.
Yeah.
I think my theory is kind of that John Brantley is just the greatest practice player of all time.
Or that they have a great propaganda machine. It's one or the other.
It's definitely one of
the other. There's definitely a combination in the both there, yeah. I think. But, yeah, I agree with you guys. I think the most important thing is just that the offense looks smooth and comfortable. From just to not put on, like, an 8-fumble showing like they did last year would mean a lot. And I think one thing I want to look for is if John Brantley calls an audible just at any point during the game. Just because apparently he's got all kinds of control over this offense, and it would be nice to see him, you know, take charge, switch into a play, and then it works. Yeah. All right, with just a week separating the Florida Gators from their season opener, we finally got a look at a real depth chart, so better late than never, I guess. No, there's a few surprises. A lot of things are about what we expected. You know, obviously John Brantley, quarterback, have a Demps or Rainey situation at running back. The wide receivers, I think we'll talk about this for a second. A lot of us thought that Frankie Hammond was going to be one of the top two guys, just because Muschamp has said he's been the most consistent, maybe their best receiver, just in terms of blocking, route running, catching, everything that goes into the position. He does not show up among the top two. Is that a surprise for you guys?
No, because Frankie is built for the slot position. Like, they've said that Frankie's done the best, but also he fits best in the slot. So they want to get him in there and get some mismatches, and I think that's why. I mean, it doesn't really surprise me at all.
Yeah, he'll still see plenty of time on the field. I think they'll be in the three receiver sets quite a bit, and when they do that, he'll be the guy out there. It's more of trying to find that fourth guy right now.
So we think number three wide receiver Frankie Hammond sees more time than number two tight end Gerald Christian over the course of the season?
I don't know the answer to that, yeah. But I mean, I'm going to say when he's on the field, he'll be the main target.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think we'll see probably more of Christian than we actually realize at this point, just from that two tight end set that Charlie Weiss really likes a lot. I don't know if I'm willing to say more than Hammond, though.
See, because it seems like, I hope you guys didn't take that as like a random question. I just feel like if he's not going to be on the field, it's because there is two tight ends more likely than not.
Yeah, I know, you're right.
If he is the best passing threat, then it seems like they would want to get him out there as often as possible.
Yeah, I think the one thing is that this is going to be a run-first team,
right.
And that's why they're going to probably have Joe Christian on the field more, in my opinion, or whoever ended up being that backup tight end. I don't really know why they don't get – Frankie Hammond's the best receiver. I don't know why they don't move him into play the one or the two receiver position as far as instead of the slot. Other than the fact that when he's on the slot, apparently he's just an absolute monster. So.
Right. Having these two speed guys in there gives you a nice deep threat, but I think you probably want to get your best players on the field more often than that.
I think we'll see a lot more of Frankie Hammond than potentially even in Deontay Thompson if he struggles a little bit. I would expect a shorter leash on Thompson this year. This coaching staff really doesn't have many loyalties to him whatsoever. You know, he's a senior. They like his leadership and the way he's been off the field for them so far. But again, it's you kind of got to play your best players at some point. And if Frankie Hammond has been one of those, I think he's a guy that could potentially push Thompson for that spot.
Do you think so? You think Thompson's more closer to losing his spot than a guy like Dunbar is?
I would say so. I don't know if you agree with me or not there, Tyler, but I think just because Dunbar has so much upside, whereas we've kind of seen what Thompson is at this point in his career.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Thompson's had plenty of chances for 2 years now to be the guy, and they love Dunbar, apparently. You hear them talk about Dunbar, and that's like their child, so... Yeah, I think Thompson would be more likely to lose his starting spot than Dunbar.
Right. It's difficult for us to say that Dunbar is like the most locked-in starter when we've never seen him play aside from spring games, but it looks like that's kind of the way it's shaken out right now. Another thing that I want to talk about is the offensive line. Some of the things are as we expected. Xavier Nixon at left tackle, Matt Patchen at right tackle, Jonathan Harrison at center. It seems like that's been the way they've been running it since he moved over there in the spring. And then John Alipio at right guard. The spot that stuck out to me was left guard, where right now Notre Dame transfer, who was playing center his whole career, Dan Wenger, looks like the starter at left guard. What do you guys make of that?
It surprised me for sure because of the fact that he just got here over the summer. He wasn't here during the spring. I know he's a veteran. I know he's been worked with Frank Verducci and Charlie Weiss at Notre Dame in the past. But still, he just came in. He was coming off a couple of concussions, which has to be scary. Also, we were all getting really excited about Kyle Coney, the other left guard. Everyone was loving Kyle Coney. He seemed like a nice guy. I was really happy for him to finally make it. And now it's like, well, I don't know anymore.
Yeah, when I saw that, I kind of took it as more as one of the other guys hasn't stepped up too much. Because coming into fall, it was Ian Silverman and James Wilson were the top two guys there. At least we assumed that. It's always who they said was at left guard. And then they kind of fell off a little bit. Kyle Coney comes out of nowhere, and he apparently looked good for a week or so. And then now he's out of it, and now it's Winger in there. So I think it's more of just that nobody has kind of solidified themselves as that left guard, and they just figured just give it to the senior who they know what he can do.
Right, I agree with that, and I kind of see it as a negative for the line, just that, like, you can make the argument that everybody's doing so well, they don't know who to start, but when it's guys that have been here and haven't played, or like Winger, who was a transfer and sat his whole last year at Notre Dame, I have a feeling it's not because they're all so awesome they can't pick who they want to put out there.
Yeah, I definitely think so. That's what they've kind of talked about with Winger since he got here, is more of the player-coach mentality and everything like that. And when that's the first thing that describes you, and when the coaches and players are talking about you, I just don't figure you're, like, going to be a lights-out left guard or something like that. You know, I feel like that's why he was brought in, was to kind of make it an easier transition to this offense for the offensive linemen. And maybe the fact that none of them has stepped up, I really do agree with you that. I don't think that's a good thing for this offense at all.
Right. If Wenger's my biggest surprise, then number two is definitely that Pop Saunders is going to start at safety. It's a freshman who came in as a cornerback and got moved over, and now all of a sudden he's with the first team. I mean, were you guys as surprised by this as I was?
I would say yes. I think it's similar to the Wenger thing, and like you were saying, like if they can't figure out who to start at safety, that's not because they have a lot of great safeties other than Matt Elam, apparently. Like you said, Pop Saunders was a cornerback at first. He's a freshman. They had Josh Evans and Josh Shaw competing for that spot, and apparently neither one of them could step up and take it. We saw a little bit of Josh Evans last year when he came in for Will Hill when Will Hill was suspended. All you need to know about Josh Evans is he was so bad that he couldn't take Will Hill's spot.
Yeah,
that's a pretty big criticism on a guy. Yeah,
pretty big knock. Not as a person, but as a player.
Right.
Physically, he looks like he should be good, too. I mean, he's got the perfect build. He's like a 4.35 whatever guy. He's really quick back there. I don't know. I mean, it kind of sounds like Will Hill, I guess, a little bit. Maybe he just doesn't have the instincts to take over. But he's a guy that I feel like should definitely take that spot.
Yeah, I thought Josh Evans was kind of a lock to be starting at this position when we opened fall camp. I didn't think there was a guy that could challenge him on the depth chart, but apparently Deontay Saunders has all the critical factors that you would look for in a safety, so Muschamp's going to go with him.
He's also kind of a Muschamp guy. I mean, I know he was recruited by Urban, but he was signed by Muschamp, and Muschamp has known him since high school now, and I mean, he's getting to mold his clay. This is Muschamp played safety in college, so I think that might also be a situation where it's like, well, you don't really know much about safety because you played cornerback. I'm moving you to safety, and I'll be able to mold you.
Thanks.
I agree with that. I think the only concern with him is size, and that's really the only thing that I think is maybe what they were a little hesitant to move him there for. I believe he's only 5'10", 5'11", really not too thick either. That's the one thing that I think could maybe hold him back there. But then you've got a guy like Elam who isn't the tallest guy but looks like an absolute truck. So, I mean, I think they'll be fine back there from that standpoint, but it's just about kind of maybe getting some playing time under Saunders this week.
Yeah, to your point, Saunders is only listed at 5'8 on the roster, so that's something to be a little bit concerned about. But, I mean, short safeties have made it work before. Ahmad Black wasn't that tall either.
He
put a pretty decent career together. So, another thing I want to talk about in the secondary is the cornerback situation. We got a depth chart, but we may as well not have a depth chart when it comes to the corners. On one side, it's Marcus Roberson or Jalen Watkins or Jeremy Brown. And then on the other side, it's Moses Jenkins or Cody Riggs. So, I mean, are you guys shocked at all that they didn't even try to give us a guess, or is it really that jumbled in practice?
I guess it's that jumbled in practice. I don't see the upside of hiding who your corners are going to be. It's not going to matter. It's not like any of these guys have played enough to get FAU film on these guys, except for maybe Moses Jenkins, in which case you just turn on the FSU game. Right. So, all right, just throw it at him.
Yeah, I think it'll be a situation where it really is that jumbled. They're just going to rotate a bunch of guys in there on Saturday and just kind of see who plays the best the first 2 weeks at least and make decisions from there. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that actually turns out, because especially moving a guy like Roberson in there, I feel like he has a lot of upside and he has like the height that Muschamp wants in that position. Maybe he's like a bigger type corner. I think he's probably a guy that I would be maybe a little bit surprised if he didn't start by the Tennessee game. I know that seems a little crazy, but I think it sounds like they're really, really high on him.
Yeah, they really, really loved Marcus Roberson. Get back to Moses Jenkins some more. I just want to let you know, Moses, and I'm sorry, but there was like SportsCenter or something was running some highlights on like FSU from last season while talking about how good they'd be this year, and there were three plays in which Moses Jenkins showed up on like a 7-play highlight, and they had a whole season to pick from. Like, well, let's just pick the Moses Jenkins plays.
Jimbo Fisher knew what he was doing last year. That's for sure.
That's for sure.
Identify the weak link and just throw it.
For sure. You guys, gun to your head, you have to pick two starters for Saturday. Who do you think it is? I'm going with, I honestly think it's going to be Brown and Jenkins. I don't think that's the way it should be. We'll get into that later, but I have a feeling that they're just going to lean towards the guys who have been here and who've done it and who have shown something. It's not great, but they've shown something. I don't know.
That's, I'm going to go Riggs and Watkins.
I'm going to go Watkins and Roberson.
Now, these are our predictions for what it would be. Is it any different from how you think it should be? Because I think it should be Riggs and Roberson.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
All right.
It's obviously young, but it's like...
Unless, that's the other thing, too, is we don't know too much about Watkins at this point.
Yeah.
Like, he just moved back to corner recently. So if he's been really good and he's one of their best, then maybe it is him. But, again, we haven't watched any Florida football at all since spring game and then January 1st before that. So who knows?
All right, so I guess I want to move into a little bit of the more bigger picture general stuff for this season. We'll start on the offensive side of the ball. I'm curious, just who do you guys think gets the most touches this season? Maybe we'll do most carries and most receptions. Do you guys have any guesses on this front?
Most touches.
For me, I would say it's probably... I think the guy who catches the most passes is Jordan Reed. I'm not sure if he gets like the most targets, but I think the way it works out is that a lot of what they do with Thompson and Dunbar is going to be deep stuff. We've already established we're not sure if Frankie Hammond's going to be on the field all the time. And then it's hard for a back to match the kind of catch totals that Reed's probably likely to put up at tight end, because we've heard so many good things about him. I don't remember who it was, but somebody compared him to Aaron Hernandez with all the things he can do. So that seems a little ridiculous, but if he's even close to that, he'll be a guy they look to pretty frequently.
To be fair, I remember that question. It was sort of a force-fed question. Like, do you think he could be like Aaron Hernandez? And someone said yes.
It was Chris Rainey, actually, that said that.
Yeah, too, so. And it was also, to be fair, it was also Chris Rainey saying that. So
yeah, never mind what I just said. There's no bearing on anything that's going to happen this year.
Do you think that would be great if he's like, you think he's going to be like Aaron Hernandez?
Nah.
He's
going to stare at this guy, wait, nope.
It's more of a take case.
No.
Yeah. He's going to be super bad.
But, I agree with you that Jordan Reed is probably going to get the most catches just because he's going to be a mismatch man. He's such a good athlete. You saw last year he played quarterback. He can run. He's strong. He's big. He's like putting Cam Newton at tight end.
Yeah, no, I think that is a really good pick and one that I wasn't even running through in my head. I was going to throw in receivers and, like, thinking maybe Hammond a little bit. But, yeah, I think Reed makes a lot of sense, especially when you look back at the Charlie Weiss offenses at Notre Dame and all the really good numbers that his tight ends have put up. I think that is probably the guy to look at.
And then when we talk about carries, we said it's like a Chris Rainey or Jeff Demme situation at running back. Weiss said he's, like, the two fastest guys he's ever had to work with at any level, which is pretty high praise for them, but...
And he's the fattest guy they've had to work at any level.
Wow. I did not think we were going to go there, but
already.
We've thrown down that gauntlet, so. Wow.
All right, well, I actually think Randy will get more carries than Debs, just because I think Randy's less injury-prone than Debs.
Huh.
Which is funny, because Randy's a lot smaller.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, I agree with you, though. I think he is the guy. And the other factor in that is that he's been working in this offense and took pretty much every rep in the spring as the only healthy running back, whereas Dempsey was running track. So yeah. I really think that's another advantage he has.
And Rainey seems like more of a shifty runner, whereas Dempsey's a straight-ahead guy. Right. And in that I formation where he's going to pound the ball, you have him just going straight ahead against guys that are bigger than him. That's just going to lead to more problems, whereas I think Rainey will avoid hard hits and contact like that.
Now, yeah, that's one thing. I agree with you guys on that. I think Rainey is going to be the guy who gets more touches than Demps in terms of carries, because he's talked about so far that he's very comfortable in the I formation. He likes taking the ball back a few yards and having time to pick out a hole and find a spot. So I think that could work out pretty well for him this season. I would expect pretty big things from Chris Rainey.
That's what he did in high school, too. I believe his senior year he scored 32 touchdowns at Lakeland, running a similar offense to this. And I think that's why he's so comfortable there. The thing with Demps that I think people know but are sometimes a little, like, afraid to say, is that I don't really know how good of a running back he is.
As opposed to just that fast man.
Right, yeah.
His vision isn't really that good. Yeah, you think a lot of his bigger runs were outside of the tackles, and it's just, okay, now run straight and outrun everybody.
Get him on a screen pass, something like that. Yeah, he's a magician out there. Like, it was fun to watch him, but yeah, I think he definitely doesn't have the best vision. Probably right about that.
And that's the other thing that makes Rainey a lot better fit for this offense and a guy that'll be definitely get the most carries.
All right, so one thing I want to talk about now is the just generally what the offense is going to look like in terms of, like, how much they run it, how much they pass it. Last season they ran the ball, I looked this up last night, I do my homework, 57% of the time. And I think a lot of that was when they switched to kind of the three-quarterback shuffle, where it was just, like, a lot of wildcat stuff,
yeah.
A lot of things like that. But I looked into a little bit of NFL stuff. Only four teams ran it more often than they passed it last season. Can anybody guess who's number one?
Kansas City.
There you go. So we could see a lot of that this year, too, even though they're switching to a more pro-style thing, that they run heavy more than you would expect from a team going pro-style.
I guess, yeah. I actually would say it's probably going to be 55-45 running. Just, and it's more or less just because of the fact that your two best athletes are your running backs.
Right.
Or the most proven athletes you have on your offense are your two running backs.
I think it makes a lot of sense when you think about that, too. Just from, you look at, I actually wrote this about a month ago. I think it makes a lot of sense to compare this offense to the Kansas City offense he had last year. And that he had two running backs that he trusts quite a bit, and a quarterback that really didn't live up to expectations the year before. Matt Castle in Kansas City, I believe, had 17 touchdowns, 17 picks his first year there. Weiss takes over. He threw 27 touchdowns and 7 picks last year. So I think that's kind of why, too, is because they ran the ball so much, used play action to open up some easier passes and everything, too. So I think that's kind of what you'll see is they'll run the ball quite a bit, but then they'll play action out of it and get some of those easier throws for Brantley.
Right. I think if Brantley's good, that could help him a lot that they run the ball. And if Brantley's the same Brantley he was last year, it's going to help the team a lot that they run the ball. Because I think the best way for Florida to try to score is to just give it to Demps and Rainey and hope they find a hole and just house it. Like from
where those are going to be a big difference is whether they can break those long runs.
I think that's going to be key because, like we said, there's not really a true possession guy. There are people who have that potential, but not a true possession receiver who seems to be fitting into the starting lineup right now. So I think the ability to create big plays, both running and passing, is going to be something that's key.
It really is, I think, a win-win situation for him to just run the ball, like you were saying earlier, just because at this point we kind of know what John Brantley is. He's probably not going to be as bad as he was last year. I think we all agree with that. But I don't think he's going to go out there and throw for 30-something touchdowns, you know, like 40. I don't think he's going to go crazy out there. I think he's still kind of a game-managing quarterback, probably at his best this year.
Right. Yeah, I agree. He's not exactly a Heisman candidate, yeah.
Unless Jay Howard's talking.
That's a very good point.
So we've kind of given our predictions for what we think it'll look like, and I think that's the way it should be. When I just look at the talent they have on the team and the way it lines up, I think their best bet is to come out with the two wide receivers and the two tight ends, and then hopefully just bust off a couple big runs. And then when it's Dunbar and Thompson, you have the threat of the deep ball to maybe keep, like, safeties and other players out of the box and make it more likely that you can open up holes. If you were running Florida's offense, what do you guys think? I mean, we aren't quite Charlie Weiss, but we can speculate. What do you think would be the best scenario for them offensively this season?
You have to get the secondary to back up a little bit. That's something. Maybe the only thing that Will Muschamp said on his call-in show last night that was remotely interesting is that that's something they're going to do. I mean, you've got to stretch the defense, you've got to throw the deep ball. just to at least get the safeties out from only going from being zoned in on the run. I think that's the bigger thing too, is to, when you've got guys like Dempsey Rainey, and that's probably going to be the focal point of your offense, you at least got to take a couple shots early in the game, at least make them respect that. Whether or not they really do, or whether or not Brantley underthrows it by 10 yards, you still have to at least try it and let the ball drop and sink complete, but it's still in their mind a little bit. So that's the thing I think really has to happen. And I would even argue early in the game, too, to kind of push those guys back to give you some more running room.
I agree. If I'm running defense against Florida this year, I'm stacking the box, I'm blitzing, I'm putting as much pressure on Brantley as I can, I'm challenging Brantley as much as I can, and seeing what he can do, and until he proves otherwise, I just keep doing it.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, I'm definitely with that. I think if you are playing defense against Florida, one thing I would do, like, almost every play to a kind of a ridiculous extent, is just blitz right up the middle. Because, like we said, they're unproven on the middle of the offensive line. And if you get past those guys, then you have to ask Dempsey Rainey to pass block. We've heard rumors that Chris Rainey blocked somebody. We haven't been able to confirm this.
Well, apparently, 2 weeks ago, Chris Rainey blocked someone, and one of the reporters that covers the Gators has been asking everyone for the last 2 weeks who Chris Rainey blocked, and we still haven't got an answer, so it might be a mythical person.
Now, if it's... So, I have the feeling if it's big news that Chris Rainey blocked one guy one time, that he's not going to be the most stalwart pass protector, so maybe if you can kind of test him a little bit, that could be good for your defense.
Yeah, also, apparently, Jeff Dempsey chip blocked someone at one point during practice, so...
Sources are saying.
Each player's gotten one block so far in the 1 month of training camp.
Right, so what I'm thinking is you blitz up the middle, you get past the inexperienced offensive line, you just destroy those two, and then even worst-case scenario, you get in Brantley's head because he sees you coming right at him and he has to move a little bit. And we saw last season what it looks like when Brantley tries to make throws on the run. So I
just watched the Mississippi State game last year.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's...
I think the thing that you could maybe do, too, is just play man-to-man with your corners, and you could even just blitz those safeties, too. That's the thing. I would leave them one-on-one just because... I know Dunbar and Thompson bring that deep ball threat, but we really haven't seen it consistently enough to make me respect it as a defensive coordinator. Like, the potential is there for it, but if you can hit Brantley early in the game and maybe knock him out of the game mentally, I think that's something it's at least a risk you have to take.
Right, and Dunbar's listed at 184. Deontay Thompson's listed at 200 pounds. I think if you want to play press coverage against those guys, I'm not really sure how quickly they're going to be able to get off that and get around you and get open. And if that's going to be quicker, then your blitz can get there. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if Howard Schellenberg is listening to this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, we're just trying to help him out.
We're really trying to help you out, Howard. I know you probably subscribe to a lot of podcasts, but this is the one you want to be listening to this week.
Trying to send him out on top.
Yeah. Right. Sure. Love you, Howard.
We'll switch over to the other side of the ball. Just talk about some people we think is going to lead the team in certain stats this year. We'll start with tackles. My pick would be Jelani Jenkins, leading returning tackler. I think if they play some 3-4, he's going to have some free reign to kind of move around and make plays in the middle, and I think that'll work out well for him. So I would predict him as the team's leader in tackles this season.
I'm going to go Matt Ewell.
I'm going to go John Bostic.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think he's the guy that we saw flashes 2 years ago when he was kind of in and out for spikes a little bit. But I think he has a lot of talent, and I think this new defense is probably a good fit for him. And no real reason to believe it based on last year because he got lost quite a bit, but I think this will be kind of a little bounce back here for him.
Bostic doesn't really seem to have that dog in him, you know what I mean? Like that middle linebacker, like he doesn't seem super passionate, doesn't seem super angry.
But he did 2 years ago, though, didn't he?
I don't know. But he's only in for a little bit, and the spice was there, so it wasn't like you got a real good look at him.
I'm basically banking off a couple plays this freshman year, so I can admit that.
For a point of reference, Black last year had led the team with 108 tackles, then Jenkins had 76, and Bostic had 57. So, to Tyler's point, I could definitely see another season where the strong safety-type player steps up and leads the team in tackles, for sure. I don't think that's out of the picture. Is that just what you were
thinking?
That's
kind of what I was thinking, was the fact that, like, the linebacking core last year didn't exactly kill anybody, you know what I mean? Like, the run game was decent, but it wasn't great. It seemed like Ahmad Black was the one kind of saving the defense a lot. And apparently, Elam is the most talented player on defense this offseason.
He's the best thing out there.
Yeah. Who said that? Dominic Easley?
Yeah, I think so.
Did Dominic Easley describe Matt Elam as the best thing out there?
My gut was to just assume Jay Howard said it, but I think you're right about that. Yeah.
Yeah, so apparently the best thing out there in the world is Matt Elam. So expect a big season from him.
But it kind of makes sense, too, just based on the fact that he's not going to be like a one-high safety and pass protection a lot. He's probably going to be playing up in the box quite a bit, too. So I think that, from that standpoint, he kind of is another linebacker.
Yeah, right. And he's gotten real big.
Yeah, that too.
I was shocked at how jacked this man was. I know they're all football players, they're all pretty big dudes, but him particularly to be a safety, coming in there looking like he did, I was very impressed with that.
He walked in there with a cutlass shirt on, like a pimp, just You want some of this?
He's trying to send a message early.
The media.
Yeah. We won't be intimidated, but he could try. Then let's move over to Sacks. Who do you guys think leads the team there? I have to go with Ronald Powell. I think he's the most talented player. I think he's going to get a lot of opportunities to rush the passer from that buck linebacker position. So that's my pick.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm going to say Dominic Easley, if only to disagree with you. Everyone seems to be talking about him as being the best thing out there on the defensive line. And so, I don't know. Like, apparently, he's got his head on straight. He's gotten over his homesickness of Staten Island, New York. And I think he's going to be a real good player for the Gators this year.
Football's really important, too.
Football. Dominic Easley's a guy who football is really important to him.
He has all the critical factors you look for in a defensive tackle.
I think Powell makes a lot of sense, but again, just to go with a different guy, I like Sharif Floyd quite a bit. I think Powell's probably going to be the one that's going to have a lot of plays drawn up for him, or it probably makes a lot of sense for him to lead the team in tackles. I'm sorry, in sacks. But Floyd is a guy that I like quite a bit from just a pass rush standpoint. I think he's probably a more complete defensive lineman at this point than the other two are, just based on the fact we saw him last year. He's really disruptive in the run game as well. But I think he's my dark horse to lead in sacks.
Yeah, one thing that scares me when we talk about the pass rush is we had an opportunity to talk to Dan Quinn the other day. And somebody flat out just asked him, like, who's your best pass rusher? And he was like, well, William Green's been pretty good, and Laurenti McCray's been doing all right. And now Ronald Powell. So it's like, I don't feel like Ronald Powell should really be an afterthought to those two, and if he is, that's probably a big problem. I don't know if you guys should read anything into that at all, or if he just, like, if the name could have escaped him, it could mean nothing. But that was scary to me.
Right,
that's
weird.
That the first thing you didn't say was Ronald Powell.
It's more scary to me that the first thing you did say was William Green.
Right.
Former backup of Duke Lemons and Justin Trotow.
Yeah, because we haven't heard anything about William Green in recent weeks.
Right, he's been all over the poster. The infamous Muschamp.
The Muschamp poster has William Green on it, which is way more offensive than the Muschamp, like, mugshot, which looks like a dramatic chipmunk.
Right, okay, so that's Sacks. Moving over, interceptions, do we have any predictions there? I'm going to go with Elam. I think, I have a feeling that's going to be where we all go, unless you guys pick just to spite me, but I think he's the only sure thing in the secondary.
Interceptions is a weird stat, too, though, because, like, you could be an awesome defender and get no picks.
That's true.
See
Janoris Jenkins, yeah.
You just sort of toss it up.
Probably Elam. I would say Elam makes the most sense in this category just because he's really the only one that seems like he has playing time locked up at this point.
Right. So do you guys think over the course of the season we'll see more of the 4-3 or the 3-4? This is something we touched on a little bit before, but, I mean, what would your guys' guesses be on that? It's purely a guess.
I don't even really care. I guess I'd say 4-3 is, I guess, the base.
Yeah, I think they could do a 3-4 potentially, but I just don't know if they have enough good linebackers for it.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably see a lot of 4-3 just because of that, and because they seem to have finally settled on Laurenti McCray at that other linebacker position, just based on the fact that I don't really think there's a lot of other guys there. I think McCray will have a good season, but I don't think he'll have like a great season by any means.
Right. I have to disagree with you guys. I think that they're better fit for the 3-4. The problem that Cody mentioned, and it's very legitimate, is inside. I think they have two inside linebackers, and I don't think there really are depth players that you can count on. But I think when you look at William Green and you look at Laurenti McCray and you look at Ronald Powell, Powell's an athlete. He can clearly stand up and make plays that way. And then Green and McCray both played linebacker in high school and in times at UF, so in addition to playing defensive end. So I think they're kind of fits for like a hybrid linebacker pass rush position, where they do have to come off the edge and play pass rush, but at the same time, they have to play the run and drop into coverage sometimes.
Yeah, but I would think you'd want to get two of your defensive tackles on the field at all times, or as much as possible, because I feel like you got Jay Howard, who had a pretty good year last year, Don Easley, who's the best thing out there, and the self-described best thing out there, and who's the other D-tag one thing? Omar Hunter, yeah. And Omar Hunter, who at one point was the best thing out there.
And Floyd, too, now.
Yeah, well, Floyd's playing in. He could slide in, but he's been playing defensive end. But the point is, I feel like if your defensive line is supposedly going to be the strength of your defense, you'd want to get those guys out there as much as possible.
Well, here's the area I kind of disagree again, because I think when you play a 4-3, you can get two of those guys out there, like the two defensive tackle spots. And I think when you play a 3-4... all three guys are kind of that bigger, in the mold of a Sharif Floyd or a Dominic Easley, and I think you might be able to get more of those players in running that kind of a formation.
Yeah.
Just because, I don't think you're lining Sharif Floyd up at 4-3 end, but I think you can line him up at 3-4 end, just because you need a bigger guy who can hold off more blocks and be stouter against the run than you would need like a William Green or Laurenti McRae or Ronald Powell type at 4-3 end who's going to just rush more often than
not. So you think 4-3 defensive line would be like Powell, William Green, Sharif Floyd.
Easily or something like that. Or Jay Howard or Omar Hunter in the middle only.
Right, but then you end up with four guys rotating in two spots.
Right, whereas...
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Whereas you could rotate... Whereas you could rotate Floyd, Easley, Howard, Powell... Not Powell. Okay. Floyd, Easley, Hunter, and then... Howard in the middle of the 3-4. Those three spots could all be interchangeable pretty much, I think.
You're selling me pretty good on this with a one-man QBC.
If you go Floyd, Easley, and Howard on the defensive line, that's a pretty solid group right there. And then you just move out of that outside linebacker spot and have your other three. I think, again, if injuries or anything like that happens, they've got to scrap that and go just to a 4-3. But in that 3-4, I think it works a little.
Right. You're really, really counting on Powell, Jelani Jenkins, and John Bostic to play well, I think, for that to work. Because other guys, you have depth, you have backups. Like William Green or Laurenti McRae, you kind of flip a coin. And then the guys on the defensive line that we're talking about who are so good, it's because there's so many of them that we're very high on this group. So you can lose one of those guys and still be all right. But I think if you lose one of those linebackers, you're really in some trouble. All right, we talked about how you would defend Florida's offense. Let's talk about how you would attack Florida's defense if you're an offensive coordinator. More help for Schnelli.
All right, go spread it out, go four receivers, and just throw it a lot. Yeah. And get rid of the ball quick, because you know that passer is going to be there. Just do a lot of short passes and test the DBs, see how the DBs can tackle.
Exactly. And when you've got inexperienced guys, too, that's kind of what you worry about. And you've got a guy like Cody Riggs out there who's not very, he's at 180 now. I don't know if that's exactly true, but... you've got some smaller corners out there, and the ones that aren't smaller are inexperienced. So test those corners all day and maybe see if you can break a shorter pass like that. That's probably what I would do as well.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think if you can spread the field out and get as many corners out there as possible, then you're doing pretty good. The only way that could kind of concern me is because when you look at Florida's defense, you have one former corner playing safety. So maybe just from that standpoint and from when you look at Riggs and Roberson athletically, maybe just from that standpoint, they have the abilities to match up man-to-man pretty well against the spread kind of formation. But overall, I think just the more DBs you can get out there, the better you can attack Florida.
Despite their quarterback only having one career completion, though, I still think that's the best game plan for FAU. Yeah. There's a lot of short, high percentage pass plays, just like 3-yard in route even. Just get the ball, get him in space, and see if you can break a tackle. You might make a 3-yard play into a 10, 15-yard play.
Right, because you're not doing a whole lot against the defensive tackle rotation we just mentioned, because those are legitimately very good players. That's the strength of Florida's team, in my opinion.
The other thing, too, with that is that I believe on the depth chart, Pop Saunders was the first team nickel. So you're sliding him down there, basically, and then you have to have Evans or Shaw back there, too, which... honestly, I think probably makes Florida more susceptible to the deep pass.
Right.
So maybe you can go with that.
Tyler, I know from a player's perspective, maybe you can explain this to me, but why, if you have five cornerbacks, do you then list a separate nickel back? Like, I thought the nickel was kind of just the third corner.
Yeah, I guess right now they have listed other nickel corners right now. I guess it's Deontay, Pop Saunders, and Cody Riggs. And Pop Saunders seems a little confusing to me because you already have him listed as your starting safety. But basically, with the nickel, it's just a different package. Obviously, but it's really a situation where you're like, all right, when we're in the situation where it's a third and long, this player is for sure going to be playing the nickel corner. It's generally a more physical position.
And I think that's kind of a good thing, too, when you look at, and going back to the safety spot, the fact that they're willing to trust Saunders as that nickel, I would assume to mean he's more physical, which means he's probably going to be all right at that safety spot, regardless of what his size is.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about this until Tyler brought it up earlier, but maybe he is just, like, Muschamp's guy. Like, he's just all over the Pop Saunders bandwagon. We're just going to ride this guy, and hopefully it works out for them from their perspective. I mean, do you really think he's that kind of married to Pop Saunders?
Seems like it.
Yeah.
I don't really blame him either. This is probably a whole different podcast in itself, but... kind of playing for next year, you know? Like, you have a lot more experience coming back, and I believe Florida graduates only 3 of 24 on the defensive depth chart. To have basically two freshmen, two sophomores start this year, it's really valuable for the next few seasons.
That's actually a fair point. Get some young players out there, get experience. Especially maybe if it's against FAU, you try a guy like Saunders over a guy you haven't seen before.
But then why would you have Jeremy Brown and Moses Jenkins starting? Wasn't that you that said
right,
that?
Yeah. I guess that kind of goes yeah, contrary to what I was saying before, but... No. Like I said, I don't think that's the way it should be. That's just, for whatever reason, my gut says that that's how it's going to work out.
This isn't the Urban Meyer regime. If that was the case, I probably would agree with you, just based on giving the older players a nod. But I think no one really has this mindset, and to be fair, no one probably should. But if I'm Florida this year, I just kind of throw all the young guys out there and just throw them all the wolves, and that includes quarterback. I would throw Driscoll out there and just hope for the best next year.
Just hope something good happens? I could see that.
Yeah, just take your lumps now and prepare for 2012.
Yeah, like Muschamp has said... athleticism over experience for him, because this is something that he's been questioned about a lot when we're all trying to figure out who the starting corners are going to be. And he said he'll take good athletes over guys who are experienced any day. So, all right, we can move a little bit into Florida season predictions. Just win-loss total for the team, where you think they'll figure out in the SEC East, and then, well, we'll hold off on the other stuff for now, but just we'll start with those. Cody, do you have a guess for Florida?
I'm going to say 8-4. I think there's four games on the schedule: Alabama, LSU, South Carolina, Florida State. They don't look good at all. I think Florida will win one of those. I have no idea which one. But I also think they'll lose a game they probably shouldn't, or at least maybe shouldn't as badly, whether it's Auburn or Georgia. So I think 8-4 is probably my safest bet at this point, with the potential to go 9-3. But I just, again, it's hard to make that judgment based on not seeing anything.
Does that include a bowl game? Or?
Oh, that doesn't include a bowl game.
I would say 8 wins total, including the bowl game.
Okay, yeah. So that kind of just gives you an extra buffer in there somewhere?
Yeah, I think that they have a schedule where they're going to get like 6 wins guaranteed. And then I think they could beat Georgia, maybe. I think they'll steal a tough game. I don't think they'll lose a game that they should win, because the games that they're supposed to win are just obvious wins. Think about it: Florida Atlantic, UAB, Vanderbilt.
Furman. Don't forget Furman. The great Furman.
They're playing Tennessee and Kentucky. I think they'll take both those. Those are 6 wins. I think those are like pretty much locked in. The only one that could waver is Tennessee, and I don't see that. I just don't think Tennessee's that good of a team. So that's like 6 wins guaranteed, and I think they can steal the Georgia game. They can steal one other one.
Yeah. Now, my mistake in that was saying that outside of those 4 games I named, that the other ones were like guaranteed wins, and that they would lose one of those. So I didn't mean that, because Auburn and Georgia clearly aren't guaranteed wins. So I think they'll maybe lose one of those games, and maybe win one of the big 4 on the schedule.
Right. I kind of look at it the way Tyler does, but kind of with the opposite spin on it, just because I feel like there are certain games that they're going to win, and there's certain games they're going to lose. Like, I think Florida Atlantic is for sure a win. Same with Furman, and same with Vanderbilt. Now, on the flip side, I feel like there's a bunch of games that are for sure losses. Like, I think Alabama is for sure a loss. Same with LSU. Same with South Carolina. And same with Florida State. So then, I think then you look at it, so that's 3-4 pretty much locked in. So then I feel like you're more likely to lose to both Auburn and Georgia. I think they're going to be an underdog in both of those games, especially going on the road to Auburn. So then that leaves you with, I think that's just like 6 losses. I think you're more likely to lose both of those than you are to win all 4 of UAB, Tennessee, Kentucky, and who'd I miss? There's somebody. No, just UAB, Tennessee, and Kentucky, those 3. I think you're more likely to lose both of the Auburn and Georgia games than to win the UAB, Tennessee, and Kentucky games, all 3 of those. So I think just when I look at it that way, from the 3 lock wins and 4 lock losses, I end up with 6-6.
Interesting. Hmm. What about, and then you got the bowl game?
Bowl game, I mean, it's hard to say, but
yeah,
just,
well,
I guess...
6-6 are going to play like some really terrible team. Like,
yeah,
really,
so
like,
probably a 7-6 season overall.
That's pretty bad, but no, I mean, I could definitely see that for sure.
So then let's move into just who we think is going to win the SEC as a whole. My pick is Alabama over South Carolina. I think in the West it's close. LSU definitely deserves consideration, but with all that's going on there with the Jordan Jefferson punting a guy in the face thing, I have to lean towards Alabama, because I think they have a more settled situation, to say the least.
I think the only 3 teams that are really in contention this year, or it seems like from a preseason standpoint, is Alabama, South Carolina, and LSU. I'm going to say LSU just to be a contrarian. I think the fact they lose Jordan Jefferson doesn't hurt them as much as you would think. Like, that's not like they're losing a great quarterback. They're just losing a quarterback.
I'm going to go Alabama. My 2 dark horses, I like South Carolina a lot. I kind of like Arkansas a little bit, and I maybe would have picked them if Nile Davis was healthy this season. I'm not too high on LSU. I think they're a little overrated, and that was before all this situation was happening. Actually, they lost their leading tackler from last year, Kelvin Shepherd, a linebacker. They lost both defensive tackles. One was Drake Nevis, who's really good. Patrick Peterson's gone. I believe they lost a safety as well. I just feel like their defense is not going to be as elite as people think this year.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. I don't think Jordan Jefferson's like a great player, but I just feel like you never want to have that kind of stuff going on, any kind of legal troubles with your team. That's definitely...
That really hurt Auburn last year.
I mean, that's a fair point, but there's exceptions to every rule.
Yeah.
All right, so I think we're about ready to wrap the show up with our Gator guarantees. Basically, we're just going to give you one big thing that we're looking for this weekend. We're going to...
It's
mortal
a big
lock.
Thing. Oh,
be ready.
Change my guarantee.
Well, I mean, some cases, small things. We'll see what Tyler's got in store. We'll start us off.
All right, my Gator guarantee is that the visitors' locker room will be left immaculate, because Florida Atlantic has not 1 but 2 Eagle Scouts on their team, according to the FAU practice notes. Jordan Sessa, a redshirt sophomore, and Andrew Steffler, a defensive lineman. They were both Eagle Scouts, and I was talking to a former Eagle Scout and a former Alligator Sports employee, Mike McCall, about this, and he said, yeah, Eagle Scouts leave no trace behind. You wouldn't even know they were there.
This is the kind of information you can't get anywhere else but the Alligator Sports podcast.
Or the notes of the FAU.
Or the FAU practice notes. Also, they do have a guy named Jimmy John, who sounds like the Haitian version of the Sandwich Man. So,
nice.
I don't know. I don't know how he's going to come to play, but I hope he does.
Keep your eye out. Mine is that, I'm going to make it a little more serious because I'm not as creative as Tyler, but I will say that Demps and Rainey combined for 220 yards on the ground.
Yeah, I can see. It's a steep number. I can see that, yeah, though.
It really wouldn't surprise me, not just because they're faster than FAU. And, again, I think we've talked about that quite a bit today, but that's going to be the focal point of the Florida offense this whole season, so why not ride the two to start the year out?
All right, mine is that either Ronald Powell, Sharif Floyd, or Dominique Easley says something just completely ridiculous after the game, like that they have the best defensive line of all time or something like that.
If they're going to win a national championship.
Yeah, something exactly, something just extremely crazy, because I think FAU's offensive line is very light as offensive lines go and very inexperienced, and I could just see Florida blow up for like 6 sacks or something stupid, and then these guys come out and just have all kinds of crazy things to say because they've been holding it in all summer.
There's a lot of swagger.
Right.
It's believable.
Okay, so with that, I guess we're going to wrap up the show. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter accounts and stuff. We'll read those off at Alligator Sports for all of our articles and all of our stuff. You can follow me at Greg Luca, no spaces or anything. Tyler, what's your shout-out?
Mine is at Tyler_Jet. That's 2 underscores. I've had 2 different people come up to me and apparently start tweeting to Tyler_Jet, the regular guy, which is his own fault for getting that before me, because now he's getting a lot of University of Florida-related questions thrown his way, and he does not want to handle that. So 2 underscores. Unless Tyler regular_Jet is listening, in which case we can flip this real quick. We can exchange it so that you don't have to go through this anymore.
There you go. Well, mine is at C Jones FI Gators, being that I write for FightingGators.com, so check me out on those two, I suppose.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about Fighting Gators. You get a plug for sitting with us for an hour here today.
No, we're part of the Scout.com network, so it's all sorts of high school recruiting information, and then a bunch of information, inside information, whatever, on the team, and then the whole message board aspect of it as well.
And you're going to be doing football stuff and football, then over to baseball or basketball in between?
Basketball in there as well, so I'll be all over the place, football, basketball, and baseball. We've got all sorts of information on all three of those sports as well.
Right. Be sure to check Cody out. So, yeah, you can subscribe on iTunes. You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. Also, be sure to send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. If you like Cody, you want us to try to bring him back, we can see if we can coax him into it.
Or
so,
if you don't like me at all.
Yeah, be sure to let us know, because he does or doesn't have to do anything you guys want. So let us know about that. And until then, thanks for listening.